Pre-show recording
is live. Well, it's not live. It's recorded. It's the opposite of live.
It's the opposite of live. The pre-recording recording. Not live.
The not live recording.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Good afternoon.
I think I got like a bunch of emails from this guy who was like in a property deal. Like in Australia.
Oh, wow.
It's like,
did you scuttle the deal?
No, I just said you got the wrong email address. So he tried sending it again to my, but this time he added a period between, you know, your first name and your last name.
Which doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And I told him, like, I just wanted to let you know that it doesn't matter what punctuation you use in between, it all resolves to the same address. Because I've been getting a lot of those. I'm on some weird New South Wales real estate. Realtors like list, even though I keep trying to unsubscribe myself, so I keep getting pitches for, like, they seem kind of decent.
You're like, huh, actually it's not bad.
It's from Hill Sea Real Estate Company. One has a nice pool. It's $560,000 Australian,
yeah.
Which is what, like $2 here? No, it's probably, it would probably be like 400 something, 480, 480.
$560,000.
Two car garage, two bath, four bedrooms. And it's within walking distance to both primary and high schools.
Huh.
I guess, huh. I don't know, yeah.
It's not bad.
Four Bunya Court in Helensvale. Oh, catchment area for the Helensvale schools. So I guess that's their school district.
Well,
more beautiful porcelain tiles throughout the home.
Get on a 20-hour plane ride, you're set.
It's, man, that's a commute. I hate that flight. It's like the worst.
It's kind of.
I'm sure flying to the Middle East.
$560,000 is $560,000 Australian. Sorry, is $432,000 US.
Four something. Yeah, 430. I gave. Oh, it's just weird because it has like these weird marbled tile. Especially in the hotter areas, they use a lot of tile because it's like in Florida, you just don't want to stick the things. Mm-hmm. And everything is, and they build out of brick.
Yeah,
which is cool.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. No, I just found it weird when I was there and I drove past the housing development site. There's just a bunch of bricks, like, you know. Like gray, like the kind of you used to hold up, you know, you built your
like
college shelf
blocks?
Out of. Not cinder blocks, but They looked like cinder blocks. You know what I mean? Like they're shaped the same way.
Yeah. I actually went and bought some cinder blocks to kind of keep this. There's this one area in the fence that where the fence is just being raised up a little by over time, and wanted to make sure that the.
Make sure the spirits of the undead don't come up to
pretty much
soul.
Also Sawyer. So I put a cinder block there and I was like, wow, cinder blocks are cheap.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty strong too.
Yeah. People in college used to make shelves out of them, right?
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
They're heavy though.
They're just really horrible for earthquakes.
Go to IKEA now, like with their parents and get stuff, right?
Is that what kids do?
For building material? Yeah. Some do. You know what's weird is I have this shelf that my roommate got from Target and then bequeathed to me when he moved out. And it's, what, 20-plus years old?
Yeah.
Still holds up. It holds up my TV and held up my TV, my entertainment system. Now it just holds up my Xbox and a power supply. But that thing was solid wood. Granted, it was solid wood from Brazil, but it was still solid wood. Now everything is like some sort of some level of particle wood and sawdust glued together with an adhesive and bonded to two thin, you know, pieces of wood veneer. No, I shouldn't say wood veneer, just wood.
Sure, just wood. I understand.
Bad boys, what you gonna do?
Anything specific in these emails I need to watch out for or think about or any of that?
Should look over them so you know what their topics are.
I read through them, but I wasn't sure.
There's no traps, as far as I know. Did you want to switch off reading them, or you want me to just read them all?
I can totally switch off if you'd like, whatever you'd like.
shoot. I wish I would have thought of that before just this second, because they probably need summarizing is the thing. Which
summarize.
Well, one of Tom's was just going to do off the top of my head while I read them.
Right. One of your best mutant skills is I've seen you do this so many times. You just see an email or a wall of text and you are somehow able to dissect it without actually having to dissect it, which is pretty impressive.
I vivisect it.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I should graciously accept your compliment rather than making a lurid joke about vivisection.
For how much RAM they'll put in the Scorpio? And I'm wondering if they'll put little fake claws that will hold the controllers when you're done.
Why don't you read line 9 in our pre things?
I could do that.
I'll read the bummer of line 10.
Yeah, we could totally do that.
The downer.
You know that.
Or should we flip flop them and do the downer and then do the light in the mood with the
this here, is CNET and here are the stories that
CNET autoplay video.
Hey CNET, one of these days you'll go back to not autoplaying. It's the cycle of CNET.
That'd be nice. As foretold in the epic
the tales of
epic Gildo. Documentary.
At least have it be what's the name on a TV in a Costco. Because that's how I always remembered seeing him. I can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Cooley? Brian Cooley?
Yeah, Brian Cooley. I'd walk into a Costco and like 20 screens that have his face on it.
Brian Cooley talking to you. Yeah. I had the same experience.
It's weird.
You should do a deal with a beverage company, a Cooley cooler.
There you go.
Be like a cactus cooler, a soda. Maybe not so sweet.
There's some character.
Do ciders. Ooh. Dry ciders.
Dry cider.
What is a cider? It's more than just a juice, right? It's the pulp? Or like what?
That is a really good question. Because is the difference between cider and juice? Because you can have a non-alcoholic cider, so it's not just that. Fresh cider is raw apple juice that has not undergone a filtration process to remove coarse particles of pulp or sediment.
Yeah, I've had that.
So then can cider only be like that sort of fruit, like a pear cider? But you can't have an orange cider, right? Because that's just orange juice, even if you do throw the pulp
apple
in.
Apple juice is juice that has been filtered to remove solids and pasteurized so that it will stay fresh longer.
Yeah. The ciders can also, that's why you can get hard ciders. You can get ciders that are alcoholic because you can ferment.
Ferment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you do the pasteurization, you lose all that.
I'm going to start our broadcast.
You lose the little yeasty and microbes that eat everything and turn it into alcohol.
Plus, I don't know if you've ever had a non-filtrated apple cider type thing, but it goes bad really quickly. So when you make it, you have to like consume it immediately or else.
That's what I loved about cider growing up. Going to the apple orchard and we'd get cider and it'd be so good, but we'd have to drink it right away. Now, all the ciders that I drink that are alcoholic, they don't have the pulp.
Right.
So they're really just juice.
They're just juice with alcohol in them.
Yeah.
But if you and I were going to, go out and moonshine or something.
Yeah.
We'd go that way.
I assume you could make an alcoholic cider that had all the pulp and stuff in it. And those, I think I even remember seeing those before, but most of the ones I see don't have pulp. They just they're just like apple juice, but fermented.
My wife's grandfather used to moonshine and he would make.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Did he have you come over and taste it and see if you went blind by?
No, it was before my time, but he's
try it out on your wife. He ain't blind.
Out in the middle of the bayou making moonshine.
Oh, Randy, that was the thing that person was doing. Mm-hmm. Were you distill wine to get even higher alcohol?
You've raved about Kim's gumbo, right?
Oh, her gumbo and her jambalaya and her crab boil and all that stuff's really, really
good. What is this? Where is this?
My wife, she makes a lot of stuff.
Figure out how to trick her into making that.
For Valentine's, we have a tradition with the kids that we make a big steak, shrimp, crab boil thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if we can get it fresh, we'll get crawfish, but it's really hard to get that here. So
Last night I made pork chops, panko breaded pork chops, which is Eileen's favorite, and chocolate chip cookies, fresh baked chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. That was the Valentine's.
We learned on Geek Friday that Tom is quite the chef these days.
Oh, Eileen likes to brag, and I'll take the compliment because she will not say it if it's true.
Yeah, we went to Costco.
It's a show worth listening to because it's great how she's like really like, you know, saying great things, very nice things, which is embarrassing but nice. And then she's like, and he didn't used to be very good at all.
Yeah, I liked how she threw that in.
Because she really didn't. Like I call it bachelor cooking, like the stuff that I would make to survive on my own when I lived in Austin. And I would make stuff like that. And she'd be like, yeah, that's okay. We don't need to make that again.
Yeah.
I mean, I would make tacos with green olives in them and crazy.
What?
Yeah, pickles.
Like, was there meat or is that just it?
No, I used to make the tacos I used to make. This is before Eileen complimented my cooking, before I even met Eileen. Can of refried beans, right? Canned refried beans, some cheese, some green olives and pickles. And what else? I feel like I'm missing one other ingredient.
Wow, that's almost as bad as my...
Probably some salsa is all I'm thinking.
My mac and chili. Mac and cheese chili.
Yeah.
Where you just take a box of mac and cheese, cook that, then you mix it in with a can of... Hormel's.
Yeah.
What's the other one? Stag?
Bush. Stag, yeah.
Stag chili without the beans. And then you throw in some, like, boil some peas and carrots and throw it in. That stuff will kill you. Okay. It's great, though. It tastes great. So much fatty
and less filling. Salt. Oh, wait. No, more filling. You're right.
Fat, salt, fatty
great
salt.
Great taste. More filling.
Crockpot. I used to, Captain Jack in the chat room, 913, was saying crockpots are useful. And I've done that. The problem is, after a while, I just got tired of prepping all the ingredients.
Yeah, I make crockpot chili. I make crockpot stew.
I do the stew. I like stew, anything I can put over rice, which is why I like stewy stuff. Because I'm Asian and I like the rice.
I do.
But I don't eat white rice anymore. I eat brown rice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Better for you.
Like basmati rice. Yeah. My favorite.
Is it? That is good, but it's not sticky enough.
No, it's not at all. In fact, I think that's why I like it, is it's super loose.
Roger, I
waffle back and forth. There's times I want loose and sticky and sometimes loose.
It's true of all of us.
Control. I've never truer words been said out loud on a show.
All right, Roger, you should have control. And we are ready to rumble. You guys ready? Here we go.
The Daily Tech News Show is brought to you by its listeners, not outside organizations. To find out how you can contribute, go to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, February 15th. The Ides of February? I don't know if that's true. 2017, I'm Tom Merritt. Scott Johnson alongside on the Wednesday. How are you, Scott Johnson?
Pretty good. I'm actually excited for February to end because it's the least fun month to say. It's annoying. It doesn't roll up.
February?
Yeah, I don't like it. March is great. March is just March.
Punchy, right? Like, yep. That was a good meeting when they came up with the name March.
I agree. I think I'm with them on March, June, July. Those are all good. But February, come on now.
Well, it is a What's On Your Mind Wednesday. So after we work through our tech news, we've got a lot of great emails from folks on feeding back on other topics we've been talking about on the show. Some expert takes on this from a game developer and some other people. But first, a downer. Deaths resulting from motor vehicle crashes in the U.S. rose 6% in 2016. Those numbers are still being adjusted, but generally when they get to the adjustment phase, they don't adjust very far. So it might be 13 or 15%, but it's roughly going to be pretty high. It's up 14% since 2014. It's the largest two-year increase in motor vehicle-related deaths in 53 years. Motor vehicle-related deaths have been going down because of safer vehicles, but the speculation is speeding, drunk driving, and the use of cell phones are among the likely contributing factors to this rise. So please, no joke, folks, be careful when you're driving.
My immediate thought was, in reading this, was the cell phone factor has to be a huge contributor here. And I know we don't have data to back that up exactly, but man, it's got to have, there's got to be some correlation there. Yeah. I guess we'll find out if they dig any deeper. I will say this, thank goodness all this auto driving cars and electric cars and automation stuff is being talked about all the time, because maybe, just maybe, this sort of stuff will contribute to safer roads in the future, because we all decide to quit hugging the wheel.
One can hope.
Microsoft tweeted a picture of components from Project Scorpio, and they did this in a tweet saying we should brace for big news in its E3 press briefing. And for those who are not in the know, that's Sunday, June 11th at 2 p.m. Pacific. They're usually earlier in the morning, so I'm very curious about that, just as to where it lands with everybody else. But anyway, that's going to be interesting. And the photo they showed isn't much. It's like circuit board, CPU. Yeah. Stuff like that. But yeah, I think they're banking pretty hard on Scorpio. I think the PlayStation Pro landed with a bit of a, not a whimper, but it's not that big a deal. So they have a chance here. They have a window.
Mark your calendars, folks. Now, here are some more top stories. Bloomberg has sources who say Verizon is close to a renegotiated deal for its acquisition of Yahoo. If you remember, they had agreed to pay $4.8 billion, but then Yahoo revealed two major data breaches, and Verizon was hemming and hawing about maybe we would like a different price. Well, it sounds like they probably got one. It's not finalized yet, but the sources are saying Verizon is pretty close to agreeing to pay $250 million less to acquire Yahoo. So something around $4.5 million. Or $250 million, actually. It's $4.8 billion. So it's not going to be that much of a discount, is what the math says. Now, Verizon and the remaining part of Yahoo that Verizon is not buying, that's the part that's just holding on to certain investments and will be called Altaba, will share legal responsibility for the breaches, at least according to Bloomberg sources. So that's part of this deal too, is Verizon doesn't want to be on the hook for the fallout of all these data breaches. And the fallout isn't done. Users are receiving notifications today about unauthorized access to their Yahoo accounts in 2015 and 2016. These aren't even related to those two big data breaches. These are a previously disclosed problem, which occurred when a suspected state actor was forging cookies, which would allow them to gain access to Yahoo accounts without having to have the password.
Yeah, man, that stuff just keeps stacking up. I don't know if that's going to give them any better deal than $250 million, but I still, to this day, don't know really what people are getting for $250 million. That aside, I feel like this acquisition has been in the talks, like I told you earlier via text, like 3 or 4 years, but you assured me it was only like early 2016, maybe rumored in late 2015.
Well, no, yeah, but because you asked, I went and I did the digging. December 2015 is around the time the first rumors started that Yahoo was serious about selling. There have been rumors percolating for a long time, which is part of this. And then it was April 11th when Yahoo went up for sale and said, we're taking bids. And then July 25th is when Verizon agreed to buy them, and that's been stringing along ever since, in some part because of regulatory approval, of course, but in some part because of these data breaches.
One might say Verizon is becoming Yahoo Sirius. Moving on. Ask your parents, folks. Ask your parents. You may not know who that is, but you can look him up. Later this week, Pokemon Go. You all remember the Pokemon Go. Last summer was all about your Pokemon Go. You may not be playing it as much now, but many still are. This week, that's later this week, they'll add more than 80 new Johto Pokemon. And this is from the 1990s Pokemon Gold and Silver series of the games. They will all be discoverable in the wild. And there will also be new evolution items, two new types of berries, along with new avatar items, and something they're calling, quote, encounter gameplay, unquote. Now.
Yeah, they didn't give us any details on that, did they?
No, I have a theory. The big complaint about Pokemon Go since its inception was that it didn't really feature any sort of on-the-fly battling with your friends. This lends some credence to the idea that I could meet up with you in a park and we could battle out right there and then. And there's really no reason you couldn't. I can't think of any technical reasons why that's been hard in the past. I just have to sort of build the code around the gameplay. So I think that's what's going to happen. You're going to have all this collected stuff, and you're now going to be able to square off with your friends without having to go to a gym and, you know, dominate the gym against strangers. So I believe that's what they'll do, or maybe I hope that's what they do. That'll probably be the thing that gets me out and playing again.
I hope you're right about that. I mean, I haven't actually played Pokemon Go in quite a while, but I don't think it's changed much in that you battle Pokemon that you encounter in order to capture them. And that's what the big news is here. They're like, hey, you guys who played in the 90s, a bunch of those Pokemon that you miss from then are going to show up in the wild now. But otherwise, if you want to battle somebody else with the Pokemon you've collected, you have to go to a gym. And the gyms are not evenly spaced. Sometimes gyms are very far. Sometimes gyms are being held by somebody who's way more powerful than your character, and you really don't have a chance. And so, yeah, that sort of encounter gameplay where you just encounter someone and say, "Hey, let's do a battle," is absent from this.
Yeah, and all the game has done up to this point that is definitely a departure from the games that it's based on. Is you're just, oh, there's a thing here. I'm going to throw a ball at it until I catch it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's usually the last bit of the actual gameplay loop of Pokemon, where you pull out your three most powerful guys, you have it on team, and you attack that creature until he's almost dead. Then you throw a ball on him. Maybe they're going to try to include that as part of this. That seems like a little overkill, since this sort of stuff is maybe better suited to the portable 3DS games, but I'm really curious to see what this is, because they've got, if they want to have another summer like last year or even anything close to it, they're going to have to put some new stuff out.
Open Whisper Systems released an open beta for the messaging app Signal, adding encrypted video calling, improving the quality of the voice calling. Both users have to opt into the beta to begin video calling. And if you're an iOS user, you can choose to use CallKit in iOS 10 to be able to answer Signal calls from the lock screen. Though Signal being very careful about this, it's only available in the beta. They aren't sure whether and how they're going to roll it out to regular users, because it syncs your call duration and your destination, which are pieces of metadata, with iCloud. So you can turn that setting off if you want. If you don't want iCloud to have your metadata, which people using Signal may not want Apple in possession of any of that, you can go into settings and turn that off. If you want to try out these new beta features, go into your Signal app, into settings, find advanced, and enable video calling beta. And lastly, Signal will now warn voice and video callers the same way it warns text message callers if it detects a change in the encryption key indicating a man-in-the-middle attack. Before, if you were on voice, it would display a keyword and you would say it to the person on the other end. And if your keywords matched, you knew nobody in the middle was attacking you because of the way they generated these keywords based on your encryption keys. Text messages, on the other hand, just automatically detected it. So now voice is going to work the same way as text messages, as will the new video calling.
Very interesting. You guys talked yesterday about Chime from Amazon.
Yes, yes.
I wanted to take this moment while we're talking about some VO stuff from somebody totally different and not exactly change the subject, but mention that I'm going to actually give that thing a swing in a few environments with podcasting to see how it goes. If there's one thing podcasters are constantly in the search for, it's tools for communication, for conferencing, for calls, while they're doing shows, be they live or otherwise. So I'm excited to try that. And every time something new gets talked about, even when this gets talked about, that's what my brain does. It goes, how can podcasters use this to talk to people across the country?
Yeah. And the problems with us using these sorts of things, like with Signal, for instance, we're broadcasting. We don't need it to be encrypted. So Signal really isn't the best version, even though it works very well. And Moxie Marlin Spike and folks over there have made a really good app that makes encryption almost seamless. And apparently this video calling is working in a way that just encrypts on the fly, and it's amazing. So I'm curious to try it out. But yeah, it wouldn't be great for this show, because why do we need to have secure end-to-end encryption when we actually want everyone to see it? We have different security concerns in that case. So Hangouts, sure. Skype, again, always things that are kind of meant for something else, usually business video conferencing. So I'm curious what your test shows with Chime, because with Chime, it's really meant for the enterprise. They want big companies to sign a contract and get this stuff going. But who knows? Maybe you can ride in on those coattails too.
Well, and even, I've done some fiddling with Slack video. I've messed around certainly with audio with Discord. They have video coming, and Discord is currently free across the board and not aimed at enterprise at all, even though it's basically Slack and all of its functionality. We are entering, though, a new era that I thought we were never going to get to. I kind of thought we'd skipped over it and said, well, we don't really care. We'll just let the Skypes of the world handle this stuff. And now we're moving on to new innovative ideas, whatever those may be. but maybe finally we're entering into a new communication era akin to the kind of thing that happened when video became something you could watch regularly. The bandwidth supported it and you could go to YouTube and see anything you wanted to. Now that's commonplace. We're finally getting to a place where our communication tools are more than two or three choices, and we can have the quality we want or expect and consistency, and we can have encryption through things like, you know, this app. So yeah. I love it. I think we're heading to a cool new place that I will personally be able to cannibalize a little bit and use for my
where own. Chime meets Facebook Live. That's where you want to live, right?
Exactly where I want to be. The Wall Street Journal reports, its sources say, Amazon and Google are considering launching features this year that would let people use the Amazon Echo and Google Home as replacement for, wait for it, your home phone.
My what?
I know, remember those? Issues like privacy for calls and regulatory requirements, like emergency services, 911, that sort of thing. That kind of integration needs to be worked out still, but Google has experience with regulatory issues through its Google Voice and Project Fi services. This is a really cool idea. I already basically do this. Like, I don't talk to anyone on anything resembling a traditional phone anymore, anywhere in the house or portably. Why not? I'd love to be able to yell at my device, my Echo or my Google device, and say, yo, call mom and tell her, you know, see if she's home or whatever. That seems really smart to me. But why the worries about regulation? Is it just that people will think that they're fail safe and if they have to do a 911 call?
There's a couple of things here. One of them is whether you can get people to say, yes, I would like to have my phone conversation on this device that is known to record me. And trust that privacy. Not to mention, and this isn't a regulatory thing, but just you're essentially on a speakerphone all the time when you're on a Google Home or an Amazon Echo, right? Everyone else in the room is going to be able to hear your call. So if you're going for the market of like, hey, folks who still have a landline, we can replace that landline with our new service that uses Amazon Echo or Google Home as the phone, you're going to have to offer something else for those situations. I also think that the people who still have landlines in most cases are less likely to be the people to want a Google Home or an Amazon Echo. More and more people who are adopting technology don't have a landline. They just use their phone or some kind of VoIP solution. So it's interesting to me how they would go about this. And this is why this isn't an announcement. This is two companies considering it because they see an opportunity here, but they don't know which opportunity is the best and what they need to do to make it work. And is it worth all of that effort? If you want to replace people's landline home phones, then you got to do 911 integration and you got to provide a service. And Google's got some experience with that. I'm sure Amazon could brush up on it. On the other hand, if you just want to say, hey, let's have some skills that take advantage of the mic as well as the speaker to do VoIP calls, and we could tie it into Skype, we could tie it into Google Voice, then that's easier. And it becomes something that is mildly useful for people who are early adopters.
Joel Couture in the chat suggested something or asked this question. If it was the Google device, would it just be finally a more practical use for the Google Voice number? And quite possibly. That's already kind of an established backbone. It's got voicemail, you know, interfacing with that and creating a front end for users is no big deal.
I mean, I wouldn't say finally. I'd say another, because Project Fi is a great use that's of the true. Google Voice number already. That's a really
good point. But in a lot of ways, it's like, well, you've already got a thing that you've owned for all these years. And there have been times where you didn't know why Google owned that thing or why they purchased it. Now it's, you know, a perfect use for it. So quite possibly. I mean, I'd do this in a minute, but I think if I already had a landline, there'd be a reason I already had it. So probably not for me if I was that guy. I agree.
Yeah, I'm curious about that as well. Here's another one that is maybe brilliant, maybe serving too few people. Kavo, C-A-A-V-O, announced its streaming media box, which plugs into your other boxes. So if you have an Apple TV, a Roku, or a cable box, they plug into Fire TVs as well. It provides a unified front end that allows you to just find the shows and services you want without having to remember which box it's on. Kavo uses some machine learning on the back end to interpret what's getting sent to it from other boxes, so it knows it sent the right command. So for an Apple TV, for instance, the way it works is you have to install a Kavo app on the Apple TV for it to be able to launch things from Apple TV. But once you do that, what's happening on the back end, all you see is, hey, Kavo, launch Netflix. And it goes and uses machine vision to find the Kavo app on Apple TV, launch it, and use the Kavo app through the API to launch Netflix. Anyway, there's some crazy stuff going on behind the scenes. They demoed it at Code Media, and the demo at least works. It's essentially trying to do what you do when you control a box by looking at what's on the screen. It also has an Amazon Voice Services skill, so you can either speak into the remote or talk to an Amazon Echo or an Amazon Dot, Echo Dot, and control it by voice. Kavo was founded by the late Blake Krikorian. He's the former Slingbox CEO who passed away last year. It's run by former Microsoft employee Andrew Einaudi. And Kavos are going up for pre-order in June. I had read May earlier, and I think that's what I said on the morning stream and Daily Tech headlines. But since then, all of the articles have been changed to say June. Going up for pre-order in June for $400, shipping in September. So this is pricey.
It is. I have so many questions, but I'm going to limit it to two that maybe you can answer. One, somebody threw out this criticism this morning, and I'll just repeat it because I already know you have an answer for it, but I think in a rhetorical way, this is a good thing to bring up. How is this anything more than just a 8-port, $400 HDMI splitter?
HDMI switcher, yeah. Well, it is that, right? And that alone is actually kind of nice, right? You don't have to, like, for instance, with the Logitech Harmony, which is kind of the next step below this, I have one remote that controls everything. There's a hub that connects to Wi-Fi, and then it blasts out infrared. But I still have to tell the Logitech remote, and I have to go in and reprogram it and say, hey, the Apple TV is on HDMI 2 on this switcher and plugged into HDMI 3 on the TV, and that's what you need to do to make it happen. And if I move that to another room or I change the device, I have to go in and I have to reprogram it myself. With the Kavo, you plug in the Apple TV to port 6 on the Kavo, and you never have to think about it again. Kavo knows it's an Apple TV. It auto-detects it. And if you unplug it and plug it into a different port, it auto-detects that. If you unplug it and take it off, it eliminates it from its memory. You don't have to do any of that programming. On the other side of it, once you got everything plugged in and you've logged into your services and told it which devices you prefer, all you have to do is say, watch transparent. And it says, ah, transparent is on Amazon. And he prefers to watch Amazon off the Roku, so I'm going to automatically go in and watch the Roku. So you don't have to know what devices are hooked up to what. You don't even have to remember anymore once you set it up what devices you have plugged in. You don't even have to remember what services the shows you want to watch are on. You just say, I want to watch this, and it does it.
Yeah. Now, I love all that. Here's the other question, and this is one we haven't talked about. Is this a threat, or do you see any problems from Apple, from Amazon Fire TV, any of these other Roku, whoever, are they going to not like this?
That was the question Walt Mossberg asked them at Code Media, and they sort of chuckled and said, well, we've had talks and we think it's fine. Please don't ask us that again. I think what they're doing is trying to say, look, we know they don't love this because that's why everybody has their own interface, right? But we're not doing anything to tread on them. We're not getting into their APIs or hacking into anything. We are using machine vision where we have to, but you know, you can't really defend against that without saying don't show the video right over HDMI. So as long as they're compliant with DRM and everything, there's really not much folks can do. And they did say they are meeting with these companies, I think, in an attempt to assuage their fears and say, we're not out to undermine you. We're just out to make the interface better. And at bottom, their answer was those companies should focus on content, which a lot of them already are.
Yeah, it's weird. And I know it seems unrelated, but this feels like the conversation about news readers a few years back and the idea that people had curated, expensive to run, ad-supported websites that were just having their information pulled into news feeders like Google Reader before it went away and others that still exist today. And that felt like, well, you're not even using our platform. You're just taking our content. And in a way, that's kind of like this. The difference here is these services, these multiple boxes you have, these up to 8 devices, it's now going to be on them to provide the best possible content on those devices, not necessarily compete on brand loyalty or user interface quality. It's all about where am I finding the movie I want? Where am I getting the TV show I want? And if you've got more of that on your platform, then this thing's going to feed that to the user. And therefore, you're the one winning because you're going to get the subscriptions. So that's fascinating to me. I cannot wait for this thing to come out and see how it goes. I kind of want one, but I want someone like, oh, I don't know, Tom Merritt first.
Take a little of that Cord Killers funding and try it out. Yeah, I would like to try it out, and I probably will. I'll try to get in the pre-order. They say they're only going to make 5,000 of them. So it's possible that not everybody who wants one will get one. They're definitely looking at this as a trial run right now, not a mass market product. A couple of really good questions from our live audience right now. Lau Roman says, do you still need the Roku remote? No, you don't, but you can. That's the other thing that they do. They say, look, we've got a universal remote, so you control everything through the Kavo. You don't have to use the Roku remote, but if someone is visiting and they don't understand and they pick up the Roku remote, it'll still work. The Kavo will interpret the signals and use that machine vision to be able to control the Roku for you. So that's pretty crazy. And then Isting says, does it keep up with your queue? And absolutely. In fact, that's one of the reasons Kavo will make you log into your services on the Kavo itself, not because it's running the apps, but it wants to access the public APIs to see what's in your queue, what's in your recently watched, so that it knows, like, oh, you're on episode 4 of Transparent. So we'll tell the Amazon app on Roku to go right into that one.
Right. I think it's awesome. I want to see it. Also, it's this beautiful wood finish. So it's
And they say they're going to have 4 different wood finishes you can choose from. And
going back to the wood paneling, everybody, pretty excited. Finally, we have a story about the Indian Space Research Organization. They launched 104 satellites into space on Wednesday on a PSLV rocket. And this set a record for the most satellites launched into space at once. It's not even the kind of record you'd think existed, but it did. The rocket included 88 Dove satellites from the U.S. firm Planet for high-res imagery and India's mapping satellite. I'm going to call it the Carosat 2. I hope I got that right. Among others.
Carto, I think, like cartography.
There you go. A number of others, 104 total, breaking all records. So thus, as we get closer to our WALL-E future, there will be a thick blanket of satellites above our planet one day that we will have to burst through to get off this planet.
That was already true. And they're just making it worse, India. Great job. No, I'm just kidding. They actually busted the previous record. A previous record was set by Roscosmos State Corporation in Russia when they launched 37 satellites into orbit in June of 2014. Now, some of these are a little smaller, obviously, but hey, it's the number, right? And Indian Space Research Organization, ISRO, and the PSLV rocket, which stands for Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle, is going to town. I love to see two things happening in space. One is private companies getting into practical delivery, whether it's cargo or people, Virgin Galactic, SpaceX, et cetera. And the other is more countries encouraging this by having their own space exploration and satellite launching capability. I think this is really exciting.
Yeah, I agree.
Get all the tech headlines each day, folks, in less than 10 minutes. You can subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com, available on the Amazon Echo, and newly just added to the Anchor app. Thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. It's time now, Scott Johnson, to dig into the mailbag. We've got some great emails, and the first one is very thought-provoking. A longtime listener named Mark sent along a note with an idea for dealing with authorities that require you to unlock your phone. So you go to the customs agent, and like we talked about earlier this week, they say, we need you to unlock the phone, and you're like, well, I don't think you can force me to, and they say, yeah, but we can just keep you here for a long time and delay you, and so you decide to give in. He says, Mark says, imagine if iOS provided a kill password option. And it wouldn't have to be iOS, it could be Android too. The kill password operates the same as wipe after 10 attempts and erases your phone. With the kill password, it happens as soon as the password is used. With this option, you could help the authorities unlock your phone by telling them the kill password. Now, I feel the ramifications would be huge. The user did unlock the phone as requested, but it also emptied the data. So it's not torching the operating system, just deletes all your data is what I think he's suggesting. I see this as technically complying with a law enforcement officer's request. Various brute force methods for unlocking, like what the police commonly use, would be less effective as these approaches would potentially wipe instead of unlocking. You collide with the kill password before the unlock password in a brute force attack. That could happen. Having a kill password creates a huge bubble of plausible deniability. I consider this to be the most interesting point. Any and all unlock codes now become dubious for law enforcement to use, and as such, law enforcement would need to use the more costly methods to gain access. The odd side effect would be less search and seizure of phones for data mining because the cost of access would now be so high.
That's fascinating. I never thought of any of that, but I kind of like the idea, but then I also, I don't know. I don't want some weird legislation forcing these companies to not allow an idea like this. I really like that idea. I love the idea even in a situation where you're being robbed and somebody says, tell me what your phone code is because they want to get it and you tell them the wrong one and it wipes your data. Like, that's useful in lots of scenarios, but it feels like something that might get blocked, like someone's not going to like that.
Well, it could get blocked, right? It could fall under the entire encryption debate about whether it should be allowed or not. And it certainly is the kind of thing that makes law enforcement harder. And that's not necessarily a good thing, folks. We don't want to intentionally make law enforcement harder, but it's always, as we've talked about on the show, a balance between your rights and the ability of law enforcement to catch the bad guys. So it becomes part of that debate. But that aside, there's also, and KV87 suggested this already in the chat room, there's also the ability to create hidden volumes. So on a laptop, for instance, you can use VeraCrypt to create a hidden volume so that when they say, hey, unlock your laptop, you give them the passcode, it opens to a hidden volume that doesn't have any data in it. So your data is still there. It just doesn't look like it to law enforcement. The problem with hidden volumes, and Cory Doctorow recently talked about why he doesn't use them, is if they discover you are using a hidden volume, then you can incur the anger and frustration of law enforcement, and you may in fact be in violation of a court order. If the court orders you to unlock something and you unlock it to a hidden volume, you're in contempt because they wanted you to show the data and you didn't. And so this could fall under those problems. And your scenario, Scott, where you say like, oh, someone's robbing you and forces you to unlock the phone, if you unlock it to a hidden volume or a wiped data password, you may again incur the anger of the person who realizes suddenly that they don't have all of the things that thought they were going to get access to. So I'm not saying those kill this idea, but I'm saying those are considerations in whether you would want to use this or not.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder, I was just thinking about a Chromebook. If you had a dummy Gmail or Google account and used that when they asked you to log in instead of the one you normally use. Mm-hmm. Because that happens as soon as you crack the lid, it asks you for your password. That's
how right.
Then what would you probably be putting yourself in trouble is what you'd be doing. Because they're going to know, or they're going to say, all right, now log into your other Google accounts. I don't remember my password. Now they're compelling you with warrants and everything else. And now you're back in the same place you were if you just had one password.
Roger, I see you've got a thought on this.
You know, well, I was just wondering, what if you did it right before you got to the customs desk? Like you just killed it. You wiped it.
Well, and you've got a backup somewhere. That actually is a smart way to use this. So you're not fooling them. You're like, no, this is actually this is the way the phone is right now.
Yep.
It's a way to be able to carry your data with you, and yet, you know, and then you restore it when you get to the other side. I mean, you could just do that anyway. You wouldn't.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. With services like Android or iPhone, everything is stored essentially on the cloud. Now, granted, like unless you had something very particular on your phone, like my photos are backed up to photos on Google and whatever. And once you wipe it, I mean, you have the SIM that has a phone number, but you don't have any email accounts set up. You don't have anything. What are they going to say? It's like, oh, I just bought this phone. I haven't had time.
Well, and especially the difference is you did it beforehand, not in response to their request. It changes the nature of the legal argument.
I mean, I think kind of to further what Mark has is you basically have a system where you put in the password, automatically uploads everything off the phone over your data connection, your mobile data connection, onto whatever service. Like it could be a third-party service, uploads, images your phone essentially onto a cloud service, and it just wipes your phone, you give it to them, and then when you get back, you know, you re-download the app or whatever, you put in your passcode and it just restores your phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mark, we are only poking holes in this because it's such a good idea. And so we want to like, okay, it can't, it sounds almost too good to be true. Where are the weak points? But it is a very intriguing thought. Also got some emails in response to Lamar and I talking about not only the OnePlus 3T, but whether you should actually spend money on a flagship phone. And Jay Hatchell was listening to us, and it felt ironic because at the end of a car trip where he was listening to us talk about this, he got home and a OnePlus 3T was waiting for him on his doorstep. He said, I needed a new phone now, but was tentatively thinking I might want the new super amazing, awesome 10th anniversary iPhone that's been rumored to come next fall. So I was limiting myself to less than $500 for a new phone. And in that price range, you're looking at the ZTE Axion 7, the Echo Le Pro 3, or the OnePlus 3T. Of those three, the Le Echo and OnePlus both use Qualcomm's current best Snapdragon 821, and between those two, the OnePlus has more RAM, a lightly skinned version of Android, and is more developer/mod friendly. So I bought it, and I have to say, I'm really impressed. The phone is great. Apple's really going to have to bring their A game if they ever expect me to pay Apple prices again. He says, P.S., it may only matter to a small amount of people, but Android Auto eats Apple's CarPlay's lunch. My car supports both, and AA is smoother, more intuitive, and does much better at glanceable information, according to Jay Hatchell, that is.
Sounds like we got a convert there.
Yeah. And then Tyler in Gale Force, windy North Jersey, points out the reason you might want to get the flagship phone. He says, consider the resale value of your flagship phones. I buy a new iPhone every year unlocked so that I'm not tied up with cellular carrier contracts or financing schemes. This lets me sell my iPhone to Nextworth every year for about $300. Your mileage may vary. This means that my new flagship iPhone essentially costs $300 below sticker price. Yes, a bargain phone may cost less up front, but it's worth considering the lack of value in the long run in your calculations of total life value. So you spend $400 on a phone. How much are you going to be able to sell it for down the road? Are you going to sell it for $100, maybe $50, $90? Then the cost of the phone is $300 versus what Tyler's saying here is if he's spending $700 on an iPhone, he's really only spending $400 because he sells the old one for $300.
Yeah, and if you sell it on your own, see, he's using a service, that automatically means it's going to be a little bit lower. There's a bigger cut taken there if you sell this on your own on eBay. Not saying that that's convenient or worth your money or time, but you might get $600 or sometimes more. So it's a good point. It is that upfront investment, though, and then we see how things go after that. But I don't know. I actually think both of these guys have really good points about the platforms. It's just a matter of which one's giving you what you want, and maybe the car stuff's enough for Jay Hatchell and not enough for Tyler.
Well, and there's a cash flow issue, right? If you don't have $700, then you're not buying the iPhone unlocked anyway, right? So you may say, look, you know what? I can afford to buy a ZTE Axion or a OnePlus 3T now, and then I'll just ride it as long as I can. And that was kind of the point of Friday's show, was these mid-range phones are getting so much better that you can use them for quite a lot while longer than you used to be able to.
There's probably a bigger discussion about how Apple is going to, I mean, I know they've got low-end solutions. They have last year's phones for sale. They try to have kind of a legacy lower cost here moving forward. But I don't know if it's enough anymore. They've got real competition in mid-range phones now, like we're talking about here. And for them to maintain their leadership role with iOS in the space that it's in, they're going to want to, and I don't mean it's leading Android. I just mean, generally speaking, if they want it to be, stay where they are and keep growing, they're going to have to do more about the mid-range. And I don't know what that is yet or how they would handle that. It's all very non-Apple-ish kind of.
Well, the IDC numbers for India came out today, and Samsung's still on top, but Xiaomi actually made it into the top five there. And they've been on the wane in China. And you saw some big rises for companies that make these mid-range phones. Lenovo/Motorola is number two in that market. So. Rich Stroffolino in lovely Cleveland wrote in and said, with Amazon putting out Chime, I think it might be a symptom of the same issue Uber is constantly trying to manage. The Amazon web infrastructure is designed for high availability. AWS is what he's talking about, high availability, but also needs relatively high utilization for profitability. I think services like Chime are being made not as profit centers in their own right, but to keep their infrastructure busy, so to speak, much like Uber does with drivers, with Uber Eats and package delivery. Amazon is relentlessly adding capacity. It grows enough compute capacity every day to power its entire company circa 2005. I'm not saying this is the only reason for Chime. The teleconference market is terrible and easily disrupted, but I think we'll see more offerings like this as a hedge against slowing utilization.
Yeah, I think he's right. I mean, the whole point of AWS, the whole point of getting a, you know, servers through Amazon for any kind of enterprise is some of these same reasons. It's about utilization. And if they need to utilize more of it themselves, well, why not? Plus, I don't know. I like when Amazon does new things. Every time they do something new that I like, I get excited. I think, wow, this is another part of the tech sector that nobody saw coming. They were selling books and look at them now. Like, I'm impressed sometimes, not always, but sometimes with what Amazon comes up with. I'd kind of hoped that my Amazon Prime subscription would continue to be this one dome of covering all things Amazon might ever do services wise. Unfortunately, that doesn't include Chime, or at least their premium version of Chime. But still, I like it. And I think he's probably not wrong about kind of a loss leader sort of idea here with us.
We talked yesterday about the president of Microsoft, so not the CEO, the president, Brad, saying in a speech at RSA, but also in a blog post, that there should be a Geneva Convention for cyber attacks. And we discussed sort of whether it was a good thing. Patrick was a little bit skeptical of whether this could be achieved, whether it was really a call that would turn into anything useful. Rusty in Virginia said, look, this public discussion of the issues is how international norms of behavior are established. The United National Group of Government Experts, which Brad Smith referenced in his post, is one forum where nations are discussing these issues. Another one that you might not know about is the Tallinn Manual, a group of preeminent international lawyers and experts on both the law of armed conflict and cybersecurity, who just published their second version. Version one focused on armed attack in cyberspace. Lots of great stuff about just ad bellum, reasons to go to war, and just in bello, rules of war. The Geneva Convention is an example of juice in bello. I believe it might be juice, not just. The second version of the manual explores the cyber operations, all the other activity that is short of an armed attack. You've got to buy the manual, but there is a free fact sheet posted at ccdcoe.org. And we'll have a link directly to the Tallinn manual there that Rusty points out. So essentially what he's saying is lots of experts discussing exactly this thing. And Brad Smith's call is just trying to get that conversation to not only carry on, but to get more visibility.
Yeah, I love it. I love this idea that we would take this stuff more seriously. It feels like we're going to have to, and we kind of are already. But when you start saying things like we need a Geneva Convention for cybersecurity and cyber attacks, it sounds to some ears, I'm not saying everyone's ears, not my ears, but some ears are going to hear that and go, oh, well, what do you think this is? This isn't a real war. Like there's going to be a divide still about what, you know, some people still think it's the information superhighway and it's 1995. So I think this will only take a little bit of time, but I love the idea that we could have some sort of standard that is internationally recognized, supported and honored, and I guess enforced. I think that's a really interesting idea.
Finally, regarding our discussion of downloadable content yesterday, Paul says, man, I used to be appalled by companies asking you to pay for DLC, but now he's a developer and he finds it a positive as long as developers aren't abusing the system. He says, look, I know some developers abuse the idea of DLC, but they usually lose because people won't pay for it. Paul says content is cut from a game because it isn't good or there wasn't time to finish it. He writes, without DLC, you would just never get those features. Particularly good ones might have made it into an expansion eventually in the old days. But often, if the game did not do great, expansions would not be made and a lot of work would be lost. He says, as a designer, I love DLC because it allows me to add features to the game that we would never have had time to do or are particularly niche. With the core game, you're compelled to make sure everything is balanced and appeals to the widest portion of your player base as possible, and this often stops you from doing riskier experimental mechanics. DLC allows you to make features for a particular fraction of your players who really love a certain aspect of the game without forcing some new mechanic onto players who don't. DLC can even be the home silly experiments, such as a race of evil squirrels that are trying to take over the galaxy, that you don't want to canonize in the lore of the game, but you know players will love. I've seen players accuse us and others of milking them for money or just taking advantage of them, and I feel their pain, but all I can do is make the case above and assure them that all we want to do is make our games and make them better. As Patrick noted, a game is never done. There just comes a time when we are not allowed to work on it anymore. And thanks to DLC, that time is now months, if not years, after the game ships.
Yeah, I'm with Paul 100%. I wouldn't have much to add to this except to say, well, first of all, thank you for the insight, because it's nice to hear from somebody on the inside about issues that we really just take for granted or don't understand as gamers, as consumers. But secondly, DLC really has provided a way for a certain level of creativity and experimentation that I really appreciate. Like, I know certain games that I play that I would not have gotten what they eventually gave me had it not been for a digital space where we can download a chunk of content for less money and play that thing. And a good example of that was my game of all platforms for the last generation, which was Red Dead Redemption. And they put out this Halloween DLC content that was basically a zombie alternate story. And it was amazing. Still maybe the best story DLC I've ever paid for. Well, I don't think I'd have got, it certainly wasn't expansion content. And I don't think we'd have gotten a sequel with just that. Like, I think it would have been lost to the wind otherwise. So yeah, we are living in an embarrassment of riches time when it comes to this sort of thing. And I, for one, really, really appreciate what comes out of it.
And Beatmaster wrote, downloadable content is there to make a profit. Nothing bad about it, but no need to spin it. Yep. And I think that's fair to say too. Like, look, I think, you know, our writer Paul here is correct that this is stuff they wouldn't have given you. They're not hobbling. Most video game companies are not hobbling a game. But on the other hand, they wouldn't put it out if they weren't going to make money on it. So, right. You know, it's not a charity or anything like that either.
Well, plus your mileage is going to vary. Sometimes there'll be a game or an example of it where it feels a little fishy, a little shady. Gamers are smart. We know what end results can be, and we know if we're getting taken a little bit. But for the most part, that's a knee-jerk reaction. And by the way, he works on Galactic Civilizations 3, which is an awesome series. And that makes me even more impressed because I know that thing is hard to make. That's a tough game.
Well, thank you, Scott Johnson. As always, frogpants.com to find all the good things that Scott does outside of Daily Tech News Show. What else you got going on these days?
Really just the Twitch channel's growing and doing really well. If people want to follow me over there, just check it out at twitch.tv/frogpants. All the shows are there live. We do a lot of video games, creative stuff, do a lot of art online, interaction with the community. Emotes just went up. Lots of fun stuff. So head on over there to twitch.tv/frogpants today.
Thanks to everybody who supports the show, including Paul and Kathy Sullivan, Gregory Kessler, Charles Sale, and big thanks to Jude Sturman and Pete Ailes, who are among the folks who just raised their pledge at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Boom.
Boom. That's a good one.
That's what you call a show.
I agree.
Tell you what, sometimes I feel a little guilty doing these fan mail episodes, but we had so many good top stories and so many good emails. It didn't feel like a fan mail episode.
No. No. So, yeah, you have great listeners. These guys are awesome. And chat room, I'll tell you guys this, even though it's post show and not the big show, but you got a review today on iTunes that totally resonated with me. It said that Tom has the heart of a teacher. And I think that is maybe the coolest compliment anyone has ever given.
Quiet!
It's really good.
Plus, you just had nothing but teachers you hated going through school.
It was actually a backhanded compliment.
Pencils down.
I ended up with some of the most pedantic and obnoxiously
so that is accurate. I do have
all right. Titles: Yahoo buyout getting too big for its breaches.
Aha.
Does Verizon like Yahoo or like Yahoo or like Yahoo?
If they shorten Yahoo getting too big for its breaches is actually pretty good. Better, but I think adding the buyout messes it up.
Scorpio is Gemini. I think they meant Scorpio.
Yeah, that's a typo.
Scorpio. Scorpio.
Believe me. I'm not gonna.
Pokemon Go, Silver, Gold, Go, Old, and Silver.
Gold, like in Stargate.
Yes.
But you would need a U. Gold. We heard you like boxes, so we got a box for your boxes so you can have another login for all your logins.
That's really good. I like that too.
Verizon gets Yahoo Sirius. Whatever happened to him? AI is my remote control.
I was so glad I didn't tell that joke, by the way. Stupid Yahoo Sirius.
I like that one a lot. I don't think anyone else does.
But you like
what? Verizon gets Yahoo Sirius. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
That made me laugh.
It's not bad, except no millennial knows what the hell I'm talking about.
All right, who in the chat room knows who Yahoo Sirius
is?
Yes,
type raising my hand in the chat room if you know who Yahoo Sirius is. Too many bucks.
He's 63 years old.
Yahoo Sirius is 63?
Yeah. Wow. He must be serious. Is he still acting?
Okay, early returns are not good. I have no idea. Raising my hand. No, raising my hand. Raising my hand. Raising my hand. Yeah, put my hand down.
Look, I should make this clear. I barely know. And he was not, he was a blip in time, barely.
It's mostly raising my hand. But it's pretty close to 50-50.
He tried to be the next Paul Hogan in like US movie circles. He did a lot of Australian movies, but I don't think he did a lot.
The ones that were released here were terrible.
He'll always be my young Einstein.
Young Einstein, Reckless Kelly. That's the one I remember. Yeah. Oh, he directed and wrote that one.
Huh. We saw it for Film Pack, and it's a big poop. It's a big poopy.
I'm sure he's done more than those three movies.
Has he?
You can't be serious, Tom.
I might just go with it anyway, but if I don't, what's our other option?
I guess he has only three crits. He's 5'10". Our other option is Yahoo Bio getting too big for its breeches.
Well, I like going with the Yahoo angle either way. So yeah, we can let the votes. Why so Yahoo Serious? That gets the Yahoo Serious and the Joker illusions in. Packs them in.
Yeah. Who's Paul Hogan? Oh, Stoic Squirrel! You can't be joke. You gotta be kidding. Hope not.
I talked to some kids over the weekend. They were 10. They'd never heard of Bugs Bunny or the Roadrunner. So
what? The only reason I'm not going to go Yahoo Bio getting too big for its breeches is that it's actually getting smaller because they're paying less. Why so Yahoo? Should we go with why so Yahoo Serious? You know what? I'm just going to do it because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, just do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Bill's daring. Just do it.
Yes, Lunchman. There was a movie about him wearing a bucket on his head. That was called Reckless Kelly. It's based on the actual Australian historical figure of Ned Kelly, who was...
Oh, really?
He was kind of like a... Not Jesse James. Kind of like... He was an outlaw. And one of his trademark things is he dressed up in armor to protect himself from being shot.
I remember this now. Yep. Those are the only two movies I know. So he's barely known here. It's very obscure. It's an 80s blip. But he's 63. Man. Not that that's that old, but just the idea that someone named Yahoo Serious would ever hit it. So it's like finding out that Pauly Shore is in his 50s. Which he is. It's weird.
Yeah, but he shaved his head, so he doesn't look his age.
Freak out, Tom.
No, sorry. I keep trying to change the title.
Oh.
In the Audacity thing, and it keeps changing it back when I press enter.
Open source.
Wait, Pauly Shore was from MTV, right? Yeah. Initially, yeah. I just remember
from Encino.
No, that was the one he did with Brendan Fraser, Encino Man. Right? Wasn't he in that?
That was the joke I was making. Thank you, Roger.
The two movies I remember him for were Biodome, and what's the one where he was with jury duty, right?
I forgot about Biodome.
Yeah. Biodome is garbage. It was a bad movie.
It was a good idea, but poorly executed, both in real life and the movie.
Yeah. in the army now or whatever is worse though, or whatever that army.
Yeah, you know, that's actually not bad because what's her name saves it to an extent. Who's that actress? She played the tank girl.
Oh,
Laura Petty, I think. Petty,
I like her.
She saved that movie for me. She's a good actress.
All right, I'll give you that one.
Which is interesting because Tank Girl is based off an Australian comic. Or no, British comic, but takes place in Australia. About a lass who rolls around in a tank and has its best friends with a mutant camel.
It's a great comic.
Tank Girl is crazy weird.
The movie was okay. I loved the comic, though, for a while.
Well, wasn't Naomi Watts, that her big movie break?
Was that her break?
Naomi Watts and Tank Girl? I don't think so. Could be right, though.
Well, let me bring up Tanker.
And Love and Rockets was another indie comic I was way into back in the day.
Oh, and weren't they going to make that into a movie at one point?
I think it's series? I think it's been optioned out. I mean, it's been optioned out many times, but recently I think it got into development again.
Naomi Watts, she played Jet Girl in Tank Girl.
Yeah, the band Love and Rockets wasn't based on a comic, was it?
Might have been. Know.
Could be.
I don't know if it was or not.
Let me look at
that. Love and Rockets is a phrase that predates the comic, so the band could be based independently.
They were formed in 85.
When did the comic start?
And the band's name was taken from the comic book series Love and Rockets by Jaime Gilbert Hernandez.
Los Bros Hernandez.
Like Love and Rockets was like the big like, at least for my generation, the non-mainstream comic, the same way that R. Crumb was, like, super underground.
Yeah. Right.
70s.
No, when I was living in Austin in the 90s, that was when I was reading Love and Rockets, so totally.
I don't read Marvel
or DC. It was older
then,
too. It was, like, it had been around for a while.
No.
I had to catch up.
The 90s were a big catch-up time for me, too, with comics like that. Funny enough.
That's when the 90s, is that? That's no, was it the late 80s? That's when Vertigo started, the imprint from DC that brought over all the British writers like Neil Gaiman and
Alan Moore.
Alan Moore.
That was the 90s for me. Was that period of the 90s was me going to the bookstore. Oh, what was the name of that bookstore? I just had it in my head. It was on Guadalupe Street. It later became an Urban Outfitters. So sad. It was an indie bookstore, and they carried Love and Rockets as well as several indie comics. I would get my Mondo 2000 magazines there.
Oh,
my zines there.
Nice. I love stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And now
Do you remember the research books that would do do single topic paperback books about various subculture things?
Oh yeah. I do remember those. Oh my gosh. I haven't seen that forever.
That's crazy. Euro something, the bookstore's name. Ugh, I can't believe
a lot of that stuff. The European dudes were all like late '80s, mid to late '80s. And then things really took off for all those guys. But like the Watchmen happened 86 or something. Actually, you can even tie Dark Knight to that. That whole era is just an amazing time for comics. And everything Alan Moore did was great. His Swamp Thing makes you like Swamp Thing, and Swamp Thing is stupid otherwise.
The movie?
No.
Or this the book?
The comic that Alan Moore wrote is so good.
Well, Europa. You know, they rebooted a lot of things with, like, Sandman. Like, you know, if you read the Golden Age Sandman, it's just standard pulp comic-y, you know. Yeah. Fair, but he turned it on its head. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, game changing.
And that brought in a lot of readers. I mean,
I don't think a lot of people realized that there was any Sandman before Gaiman.
Oh, there was.
Yeah, no, but I think it's so lost to history. Like, a lot of people assume Gaiman created him.
Yeah, I think that's true. I did for a long time.
Now, I used to be super into Golden Age comics just because I thought they were the weirdest thing ever.
They are weird.
Because their stories are like Cracker Jack box short. Like, they're not very deep. It was interesting because, you know, until that time, characters like Captain America and Superman were treated in a very specific way. And it wasn't until like the maybe around the Silver Age that things started to change. As you got into the 60s and 70s, they became a little less impregnable. Like they had character flaws that started surfacing up. That made them a lot more interesting. Can't be a good guy all the time. Unless you're Superman, and then you need to die and come back and then raise sales. And
yeah, or you got kids. Superman these days just always has to be questioning. He's in a weird place.
It's, well, those two companies are in a weird place.
We watched Superman 4, The Quest for Peace for film.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh, you guys. Woo! It was the worst thing I've ever seen, maybe. And we had a blast with it, of course, but it was so bad.
It was horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
There's no good word for how bad it is. It's just garbage. And it was those Canon film guys. I don't know how they had the rights to any of it.
It's because they could, no one wanted to produce that movie, and they thought they would have a hit with it. I mean, the thing Superman, is, after the third one with Richard Pryor, it was kind of like, I'll just let it die.
Yeah. That third one was kind of garbage, too, but... it was better than this. That looked like a masterpiece compared to four.
There are some elements of the third one that are pretty cool, right? It's not, it doesn't hang together as well entirely as a movie, but there's some really interesting stuff in it. I don't even remember four.
Four had Nuclear Man in it, and it had, it was like the quest for peace. Superman would save the world, and the Soviet Union and the U.S. launched all their nuclear missiles, and he collected them all in space because they're ballistic missiles, and he tossed it into the sun. But Lex Luthor and was talking like all the arms manufacturers were upset at the possibility of peace. They would go out of business.
Right.
They created Nuclear Man to fight Superman, ripped making the world the safe again to sell arms.
Yeah, and how they created him is just the stupidest, dumbest thing I've ever seen.
We'll take a bit of his hair that we have in a museum. Like, it's super strong hair, but you can cut it with, like, scissors.
Yep. I love BioCow in the chat room writes, there were only three original Superman movies. And if you're about to correct me, all caps, there were only three original Superman.
Well, you know, number four was Christopher Reeve, gave Christopher Reeve his hand at directing.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't direct. He wrote. He co-wrote.
He wrote. I thought he directed, too.
Oh, it's some other clown that did it. We were talking about this the other night. He got some writing credit and then a bunch of money for some other side project.
You know, what's funny is the Salklin brothers or whatever that did the first two, three really had an opportunity with Supergirl. And it actually, the beginning of it, kind of had, it was like it was leading somewhere interesting and they just totally didn't know what to do with it. And it flubbed it. And they just poisoned that franchise until they brought it back as Superboy as a syndicated TV show for Saturday afternoons.
Yep.
Remember that series?
Oh, yeah.
All right, folks. We're going to let you remember that series as well as we fade off into the twilight. And we'll be back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young.
Oh, man.
Talk to you then.